This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
I told you yesterday about this special election in Lancaster County, PA. It shocked everybody. Safe Republican seat, state Senate seat, safe election, safe seat. Hasn't been, it's been a Republican for, you know, like a decade, a couple decades. Democrat won by 400 votes, caught everybody off guard. And yesterday, the Republican Party in Pennsylvania had egg on its face saying, I don't understand how this could have happened. And, you know, the new state party chairman, who's just basically been in the job for a couple of months, he turns around, he goes, yeah, you know, this is a wake-up call for us. Scott Pressler is all upset because he said, you know, we should have been involved in this. Cliff Maloney from PA Chase is upset. He was saying we should have been involved in this. But this little special election in PA was a gigantic warning shot over the bow of you can't take anything for granted. Is it any surprise then 24 hours later, President Trump has asked Elise Stefanik, who was nominated to be the United States Ambassador to the United Nations, to withdraw her nomination and remain in the House of Representatives? Because it is such a tight margin in the House. And the problem is they literally cannot afford to lose a single vote. And her district in New York State. So my wife grew up in Tupper Lake, New York, which is the Adirondacks, which is actually part of Elise Stefanik's congressional district. And if you remember when she was on the show during the campaign, she'd come on a lot. We talked about the Adirondacks, and I mean, I got married up there in Lake Placid. And it's a beautiful, beautiful part of the country. Absolutely. The Adirondack Park is wonderful. Lake George, you know, beautiful up there. So she represents a lot of that part of New York, and also even a little bit further west of that, St. Lawrence County, that part of New York. It's a red part of the state. She would have been fine. She would get reelected, and whoever runs for Congress there presumably would win that seat. But here's the little rub. The governor, Kathy Hochul, is in charge of the process by which there's a special election to fill the seat, and she said she was going to delay that as long as possible. She's going to delay the process as long as possible just to stick it to the Republicans, because she knows that every vote counts. They need every single vote. They can't afford one. And, you know, there's always going to be a defector. I mean, for example, Tom Massey last time, he did not want to go along with voting to keep the government open and the budget. One vote means a lot. So if you have that, if you don't have another vote to offset that, then the big, beautiful bill that President Trump's talking about getting through doesn't go through. So it is interesting how two seemingly unrelated things, which is a special election for a state Senate seat in Lancaster County, PA, that honestly nobody was paying attention to, right? Nobody was paying attention to. It was literally a situation where we just assumed, all right, this is a safe seat, safe Republican seat. There are no safe seats. I've told you this a million times. I'll say it again. The only way to run for an election is scared or unopposed, and that's it. Never take an election for granted. You can't. Because if people go, oh, it's a safe seat, then Republicans stay home, and then they don't get out to vote, and then a Democrat picks up a state Senate seat in a Republican district that Donald Trump won by 15 points. 15 points. So I'm sure that complacency set in there, and I'm sure people are like, ah, you know what I mean? Ah, it's no big deal. No big whoop. So then maybe a wake-up call turns around. They go, all right, so Elise Stefanik, yes, it's a safe district for the most part, but you never know. And in addition to that, what would the timeline be for when we could actually have that seat filled? And that's the part where Kathy Hochul comes in. Kathy Hochul, as governor of New York, wants to run. She's got big ambitions. You know what I mean? She's got a big ambition right there. And Kathy Hochul made it a point of saying she was going to slow walk the election to replace Elise Stefanik. Slow walk it. The story was from Semaphore.com. New York Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, expected to slow walk the special election to replace Representative Elise Stefanik, according to three people familiar with her thinking. And the latest sign of gamesmanship over the House GOP's threadbare majority, Stefanik was nominated to be the ambassador to the United Nations, but has not been confirmed due to her party's narrow margins. On the Republican side, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican, isn't in a hurry to fill the safe Democrat seat vacated because of Representative Sylvester Turner's death either. Republicans have a four-seat edge, so it's 218 to 214 in the House of Representatives. And as we know, you need every vote. You can't risk it. It's unclear how long Hochul will wait to call the special election. Refusing to set a date within the 10-day window once a vacancy occurs would invite Republican lawsuits, especially if she waits a considerable amount of time. But here's the thing. Hochul could actually push state Democrats to revive earlier legislation to delay the special election until November. Now, she wouldn't do that until the seat was vacated. And then she would call a special session of the legislature and have them push through that bill through. And then she would sign it. And then she would have, okay, now it's going to be in November, which means that you could theoretically, if that bill were to pass, you could theoretically have a vacancy from, say, March, April to November, one less Republican vote. Now, if somebody's sick, can't show up, if somebody's a hard no, if somebody, whatever, you know what I mean? And suddenly a bill goes down in flames. But here's the thing. Even if Kathy Hochul were to move to call the special election within the required time frame under New York state law, it wouldn't take place until about 3 months after the seat is vacated. So let's say she got confirmed today. We're talking about April, May, June. Maybe you have a special election the first Tuesday after the first Monday in June, but maybe they can't get it done. Now you're looking at July, but that's July 4th. You got the holiday there, so maybe it's not that. Maybe it's August. You know what I'm saying? They play little games here to get that election delayed as long as possible. That entire time, then you're down one Republican vote. So you get a, you know, you get a Republican who can't show up. You get a couple, you get two Republicans who are no vote. You know, there was a lot of arm twisting the last time around, and a lot of Republicans held their nose to vote for that budget reconciliation to the continuing resolution, I mean, to keep the government open. And from their point, like Congressman Chip Roy, for example, he said, I'm going to do this because it gives the president the power to impound funds. And this has to be done now in order for us to be able to move DOGE forward and everything else. But if it comes to it again, you know, there's people like Kat Kamick and others who are going to say, no, I gave you one time. I'm not giving you two times. You could have a situation where that one vote is all the difference with a seat that it doesn't get filled because the Democrat governor plays little calendar games and finds a way to kick it till at least August. I mean, look, the Republicans could go to court and take her to court and demand that the special election be held, you know, 3 months to the date of the vacancy or whatever the statute is. But like anything else, they could find all kinds of shenanigans. And then they could find, you know, well, we got to count the ballots and a ballot machine broke and that's going to be another week. And then we got to have a recount and a lawsuit and a blah, 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 blah. So there's always ways to delay these things. In fact, previously, Democrats in the New York State Legislature had proposed a measure to delay the special election to replace Stefanik until November, but they withdrew that bill in February. You know why? Because they were worried that if she went through with it, then President Trump was going to shut down the congestion pricing. She's given them an extension to do. So Secretary of the Transportation Sean Duffy has enabled an extension of congestion pricing. Now, it was kind of a little bit of a, you know, you wet my beak, right? Don't mess around with the special election seat and you get to keep your congestion pricing. But then The Secretary of Transportation said this congestion pricing has to end. This is ridiculous. And he said it has to go and it has to die. All right. So then Kathy Hochul goes back to playing games. Under current New York law, once a vacancy occurs, the governor has 10 days to issue a proclamation for a special election, which must be held between 70 to 80 days from the date of the proclamation. Now, is that calendar days? Is that weekdays? I don't know. But I'm sure they'll play that game, too. Well, we're saying it's 80 business days. We're saying it's 80 calendar days. See what I mean? Oh, I did. You all kinds of little games will be played. Well, as we interpret the statute, it really would mean business days. We're not counting Saturdays and Sundays and holidays. And we're also declaring like five new holidays, too. So we're going to maybe September, like maybe after the kids get back from summer vacation, we'll have a special election for the seat. And so that's what happened. And that's why the president came out and said, we got to keep her in the House. And I'm sure Mike Johnson, as Speaker of the House, went to the president and said, look, you know, we can't afford to be down a vote. And you could be angry and say, well, it's Tom Massey's fault, you know, because Tom Massey was a no vote last time. Understandable. You may have other no votes. You just can't afford to risk it. Elise Stefanik is a team player. She's in leadership. She's going to go along with what needs to happen. And the way you have to deal with something like this, obviously, is you have to make sure that you don't embarrass Elise Stefanik, because there's going to be a lot of people who don't understand the politics of this and what the governor of New York is capable of doing, who are going to assume that Elise Stefanik could not get confirmed. Elise Stefanik was a shoo-in to get confirmed in the Senate for a couple of reasons. Number one, she's a member of Congress. So you get that extra special, you're one of us. You're in the club. Not as good as a senator, where Rubio was unanimous, because the senators all treat themselves, you know, each other. You're the most exclusive club in the world. Oh, my God. You're one of 100. Your job, you got a 6-year term, and your job is to just literally pontificate and run for president. That's all you have to do. It's the greatest gig on earth. I was thinking about that the other day. I was lying in bed. I woke up and I said, would I ever want to be a United States senator? And I thought to myself, well, first of all, it'd be really tough winning in New Jersey, because New Jersey hasn't elected a Republican senator since the 1970s. But, and again, I'm charming, have hair. So maybe, but I could move to Pennsylvania. I said, maybe I could do that. You know, that could be good. That could be fun. Could be nice. You know, they call me carpetbagger, but that's all right. And I went, because you win and then you're in, you're golden, but you need money. See, that's the thing, though. And I don't have it. I don't have money because I work in radio. But if you did have money, you could drop a couple cool million dollars and then run for United States Senate, and you win. You're in there. Best gig on earth. Actually, the best gig on earth would technically be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, because you have no boss. Literally, there's no one in charge of you. And you have a job for life, and that's a cool gig. But I'm not a lawyer, so my odds of getting on the Supreme Court are considerably low. You don't have to be a lawyer to be on the Supreme Court, but my odds of getting on there are lower if you're not an attorney or ever a judge. Back to Elise Stefanik. The point is this. Everybody's got a big ego in Washington. Member of Congress, she would have been easily confirmed. So that's what the talking points are right now. It's that Elise Stefanik is doing this has to happen to ensure the majority in Congress. And that's what needs to be done. She was a shoo-in. She would have been in there. And that's the bottom line. I'm sure she's bummed. She was looking forward to being in the cabinet. She even had in her X account on her headline, U.S. Ambassador Designate to the United Nations. She posted a picture yesterday when they had the Women's Day at the White House, which, I mean, who is this Trump guy to declare Women's Day? He's not a biologist. All right. I don't know where he gets off saying what a woman is. But that's beside the point. I'll come back to that. She posted a retweet. She said, great to be at the beautiful White House to celebrate Women's History Month with POTUS and cabinet colleagues and friends, Secretary Rollins and Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who's soon to be out of a job. And Brooke Rollins retweeted that, the Secretary of Agriculture, and said, as the boss said today, more women than any Republican cabinet in history. #humbled. So, yeah, this is a bummer for Elise Stefanik, no doubt about it. She wanted to be there, but this is what has to happen right now. And that doesn't mean she won't be there down the road, but it's just a situation where they just can't afford this vote. And the games that get played, you know, as we look at everything, you understand Kathy Hochul wants to be on Team Resistance 100%. The president posted the following statement on Truth Social. As we advance our Make America First agenda, it is essential that we maintain every Republican seat in Congress, every in all caps. We must be unified to accomplish our mission, and Elise Stefanik has been a vital part of our efforts from the very beginning. I've asked Elise, as one of my biggest allies, to remain in Congress to help me deliver historic tax cuts, great jobs, record economic growth, a secure border, and energy dominance, peace through strength, and much more, so we can make America great again. With a very tight majority, the president continues, I don't want you to take a chance on anyone else running for Elise's seat. The people love Elise, and with her, we have nothing to worry about come election day. There are others that can do a good job at the United Nations. Therefore, Elise will stay in Congress, rejoin the House leadership team, and continue to fight for our amazing American people. Speaker Johnson is thrilled. I look forward to the day when Elise is able to join my administration in the future. She's absolutely fantastic. All caps. Thank you, Elise. That's what the president posted a short time ago to Truth Social. Now, knowing the politics of that district, because when I was up there after Elise got nominated, I think we were up there, I guess, Christmas time. And I was curious. You know, my in-laws and I don't see eye to eye on politics, so we don't discuss politics. But I was interested, and I asked my father-in-law, who's in, you know, a little bit like on the edges kind of involved locally, but who were some of the people that were going to run, you know? And there was this popular New York State senator up there who was looking to run for the seat. But there were a couple of other people that were also looking. In other words, there could have been a vicious primary. And when you have an opening in Congress like that, and it's a huge geographic district, it may be the largest geographic wise. And Matt DeSantis, see if you can fact check this for me, if you could. Elise Stefanik's district might be, if not the biggest, one of the biggest geographical districts in the entire country. It's a huge district from a landmass point of view. So you get, you know, a state senator here and a state senator there and two different sides. One's from the Adirondacks, one's from, you know, like the lake area, up the one by the border of Canada. You know what I mean? St. Lawrence County. And then you get a vicious primary. They battle it out. Yeah, massive size. District 21. They battle it out. And now you got everybody's rough feelings, butthurt, they're upset. And then Republicans stay home in the special election. You have a special election in August. People are away on vacation. Democrats swoops in and steals a seat. It could absolutely happen. And I think yesterday's election to bring it home in Pennsylvania in Lancaster County, where that state Senate seat, which should have been an easy, easy Republican seat, easy. You lose by 400 votes. So, I mean, I've seen these vicious primaries. I've seen how bad they can be, and I've seen how hard it is to bring the party back together. You know, I'm watching this in Jersey right now. I'm watching as friends of mine are tearing each other apart over their backing of who should be the Republican nominee for governor. And I'm getting worried, to be honest with you, given the vitriol that people are saying about each other based on their choices for who they're backing for governor. I'm really worried that we're not going to be able to put that Humpty Dumpty back together again to win in the fall. And I saw this in 2016. I mean, if you remember back in 2016, I had to beg people to vote for Donald Trump because they were so upset about the primary election. I had to beg them. And I said, you know, this is all about the Supreme Court. So you got to hold your nose and vote for him if you weren't ready to vote for him. I know it seems like that never happened, but it did. So it's what has to be done right now for Elise Stefanik to stay in Congress. It has to be done that way. And this way, we will ensure that we don't lose any seats. That's the bottom line. Because you just can't risk it. You can't risk a vicious primary in the 21st district and Republicans staying home, or somebody wants to sink it just to send a message to another political boss. I mean, these local political elections get very messy. And you're dealing with multiple counties, which means multiple Republican county chairs. with big egos and bank accounts, and they fight and they fight over. And I've seen this. Listen, I've been involved in this stuff since I was in sixth grade, and I've witnessed this stuff firsthand. And special elections are particularly vicious for that reason. Because you have such a short window. And unlike a traditional election where you wind up having a primary and there's like a cooling off period to a general election where everybody can kind of get their feelings together and then hold their nose and come out and vote in November, with a special election, whenever they decide who that Republican candidate's going to be, and they'll do it through a convention process, then the election's right away. So that you just have hurt feelings, angry feelings. So you get a third of Republicans stay home. You get a bunch of others who were on vacation, forget to do their mail-in ballots. Democrat swoops in, wins the 21st district in New York, a safe seat. But we said that seat in Pennsylvania was a safe seat. So you can't take any chances. It's just the way it goes. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Big show for you. Corey DeAngelis is joining us straight ahead. He'll be on Zoom. I'll be on our YouTube chat. If you're on our YouTube chat right now, you see for opening day, I've got my Charlie Hustle jersey and my Zeoli jersey. Of course, the Zeoli jersey says 3-6 because that's when I was 3-6. Of course, now it's 3-7. They added an hour to the show, which is just so darn good. But that's the jersey that they had made up for me when I first went to afternoon. So I have that behind me. And I got the Charlie Hustle jersey, which was a gift from my friends Frank and Debbie Troy for my birthday, which was really nice. So there you go. And I was going to wear the jersey, but it's a little big on me. So I figured I'm just hanging in the backdrop. Be a cool little background for our opening day show. The game's at 4 today. So we're fired up. And we're playing the team?
Nationals.
I just said Nationals. Did you hear? I was. Did that not come through because I was clearing my throat?
It was a little scratchy. You've got to make sure
the audience can hear it. Takes a glass of water. So, Washington Nationals today, 4:05 p.m. first pitch. We'll monitor the game, and every time the Eagles, Justin?
The
Phillies
Nationals
score.
Or the Phillies.
Right. Every time the Phillies score, we're going to ring the bell. All right. Got a bell sound for me, Justin?
I can get one up in 1 second.
All right. No, you don't need it right now. Because the game's not until 4. But when Henry was here, we used to do the ding. It sounded like Hector Salamanca from Breaking Bad. Ding. But you decide what kind of bell you want in the Justin era of the show. All right? But you got time. We got a half hour. And there may not be a home run for a few minutes, if at all. So, you know, we just don't know. Either way, though, we'll make it work. It's going to be a fun day. And a lot of great guests coming up. We'll talk about that special election seat with our buddy Cliff Maloney from PA Chase. What happened there? And is this the wake-up call that Republicans need to get out of their complacency? But coming up, Corey DeAngelis, his book, The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. This is all the conversation right now, but also NPR losing its funding. Why all of this matters, we got a lot to talk about on the show. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So I got my Charlie Hustle jersey behind me and my Zeoli jersey behind me. But welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. And I'm really excited that Corey DeAngelis is here, senior fellow at the American Culture Project, visiting fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research, and the must-read book, The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. Corey DeAngelis, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, Rich. Thanks so much for having me.
So how was the White House?
Oh, it's fantastic. It was a glorious day to be an American, even better day to be a parent. We're making education great again by returning education to the states. And look, this department has been around since 1979. It was created by Jimmy Carter as a political payoff to the teachers union, the NEA, the largest labor union in the country. And the proof is in the pudding. We've had 45 years of data showing that it hasn't lived up to its expectations. I mean, they created this department to try to close achievement gaps, to improve student outcomes. It hasn't done either of those things. It's only done one thing, which is spend more money, throw more money at the problem. It's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. It has spent nearly $3 trillion since the inception of the Department of Education. It's time to get rid of that unconstitutional department once and for all. Or at least try to give it death by a thousand cuts, which I believe is the approach that Trump is taking right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, it's one of the departments that for the longest time I've always said we had to shut down and close, and the federal government has no business being in there. But I know some parents listening might be nervous if their kids have special needs or worried about anything like that. Is there reassurance? I heard the reassurance the president gave, and I mean, I was satisfied by it.
Yep. Yeah, Trump at the signing said that those programs will be preserved. And the next day, which was last Friday, he actually already announced that he's moving special needs programs to the Department of Health and Human Services, and student loans, which are currently under the Department of Education, would move under the Small Business Administration. And if you look, his rhetoric has been the same on this over time, consistently as he was campaigning on this issue, in which, by the way, he won the parent vote by 9 points after consistently campaigning on sending education back to the states. He has consistently called to block grant the funding back to the states, too. And if you look at the bill in Congress right now, the main one's by Senator Mike Rounds, a Republican out of South Dakota. It's lined up with Trump's vision as well. Calls for the Treasury Department to send that money back to the states. You'll actually have more money for education than you had before, because right now we're wasting tons of money on useless bureaucrats pushing paper thousands of miles away in Washington, D.C., who don't know your child's name. The Department of Education doesn't even educate a single child. It doesn't employ a single teacher. We already have 50 state departments of education already across the country. We don't need another one in Washington, D.C. But for people who are concerned about the fear-mongering from the lunatic left, they're not arguing with the facts. They are arguing against a straw man that they have created, either because they have Trump derangement syndrome, they can't bring themselves to agree with the man, or because they're using this as a political weapon to campaign against the Republicans because they want to beat them in the next election cycle. But look, they're not contending with the facts. And I will say the approach right now is a death by a thousand cuts, trying to kill it from the inside and move agencies to move programs to different agencies or to send the money back to the states. Or what they've already done is they've already laid off 50% of the employees at the Department of Education. They were employing over 4,000 people. It's insane how many people were working at that department, not doing a bunch of anything.
What were they doing every day?
They weren't doing anything. They weren't. That's why they were able to fire 50% of the employees, and still it's business as usual. So we're saving taxpayer money already. And if you're not wasting money on these federal mandates or the people in Washington, D.C., more of that money can make its way into the classroom. This could actually improve funding for education and any other programs that people are concerned about, like civil rights protections in the bill that would move under the Department of Justice. So everything is preserved. Money goes back to the states. You have more local control. The word education is not in the Constitution, so it's the department has always been unconstitutional. It's a violation of the 10th Amendment. So promises made, promises kept. It was great to be there with Trump when he was signing that executive order. Everyone in the room was very excited about that happening, and so was I.
Corey DeAngelis is with me, a self-proclaimed school choice evangelist and senior fellow at American Culture. You can follow Corey on X at DeAngelis Corey. Now, let's think about this, the fact, the politics of this. So you said Trump won the parent vote by 9 points. Doesn't surprise me. I live in New Jersey, but obviously I broadcast in Philadelphia. I have three kids, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And I talk to parents all the time. And I knew he was going to win because the suburban moms who hated him in 2020, they may still hate him, but they were voting for him for a lot of different reasons. And a lot of the reasons were schools, education, and also to ending the woke nonsense ideology, women and, you know, men in women's sports, all of that stuff, and the Make America Healthy Again movement, because school lunches are a disaster. They are so unhealthy for our kids. So I guess my question for you is this. There are two states that have governor's races in 2025, New Jersey and Virginia. Obviously, Glenn Youngkin ran on education. It was a big part of why he ran and won, because he said parents should have a final say here. How much would you advise the candidates who are running here to make education the top issue?
If you're a Democrat, you'll probably run away from the issue like Kamala Harris did. And if you're a Republican, you should follow the Glenn Youngkin blueprint that he set forth in 2021. He won the education vote, which was the number two issue in the election, which basically never happens. Education is usually at the bottom of the list. But because he turned that into a campaign issue, it became very important in the minds of voters, because his opponent, Terry McAuliffe, said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." He was in a blue state. Yeah. Terry McAuliffe was basically the incumbent, the former governor of Virginia. And he was up in the polls significantly until that final debate slip. And Glenn Youngkin, he picked up the football, ran with it, and ran on parental rights. He won the education vote by 6 points. That was a big deal, a seismic shift to the right for Republicans. And Trump, President Trump, did the same thing. And there were two polls right before the election, both by Atlas Intel, the most accurate pollster in 2020. And they also correctly predicted Trump winning all seven of the swing states right before Election Day, too. But the polls asked, who do you prefer on education? On both occasions, voters favored Donald Trump over Kamala Harris. And so there's a big shift going on in that realm, because the Democrats have had a decades-long double-digit advantage on education for a long time, because it used to be a conversation about who's going to throw more money at the problem. And the Democrats would win that battle every day of the week. But it's changed to being a conversation about who's going to respect your right as a parent to raise your own children. And do you believe the kids, the decisions should be made by the parents and they're in the driver's seat, or should do the kids belong to the government? And most parents agree that they want to have a say. They want to be included. They want to be a partner in the relationship and the primary decision maker for their own kids. So if you're running for governor in New Jersey or Virginia, this is the path forward, because the parents are the new sheriff in town, mm-hmm. and politicians need to listen to them. The unions are losing at their own game because the parents are banding together and making their voices heard at the ballot box. Trump owes his victory to parents. So does DeSantis, his 2018 victory in Florida. He won with Black moms in particular after his opponent, Andrew Gillum, the Democrat, came out against the school choice program that was already benefiting over 100,000 kids, which were disproportionately low income and non-white kids. Yeah. So for Republicans in particular, you can make inroads with constituencies that you were not doing as well with beforehand.
Which, you know, and Cory DeAngelis, to think about New Jersey, just in that perspective, President Trump won a county in New Jersey, Passaic County, which has always been a blue county. A lot of Latino and Black voters in that county. And he won that issue. He won that county. And that was a big deal. So the school choice idea, not only being the civil rights issue of our time, which I truly do believe it is, but I think for parents right now, this is the moment to talk about it. And, you know, when you say the parents need to be heard, the parents need to have the say, absolutely. And we don't feel that way. And it feels very much like the Democrats always want to make it centralized, top down, from the state down, and then the local district is meaningless. Really, they have no point of existence. Going back, we remember when Merrick Garland sent out that letter saying that parents at school board meetings could be domestic violent extremists and the FBI could be watching you. You know, it was an attempt just to silence them, doing the bidding of the unions and the school boards association. And I want to play a clip for you. This is the troll under the bridge who literally steals kids' milk money, Randy Weingarten. She does. She waits for the kids and then she jumps out and grabs their milk money. This is Randy Weingarten losing this over the cutting of the Department of Education, Cut 21.
Because the workers of the country, the professors of the country, the teachers of the country understand what can be lost if we give in to what is a McCarthy-like inquisition.
McCarthy-like inquisition, Corey. McCarthy-like.
She also went on MSDNC saying that she was very angry and she was mad about the Department of Education going away. I don't think she's that angry. I think she's more so afraid than anything else. She can see her gravy train slipping away. Her power is slipping right through her fingertips as we speak. And that's too bad for her. She makes, you know, over $500,000 a year fighting to trap other people's kids in her failure factories that she likes to call public schools. And that's just Look, this is the only person who's losing in this scenario, the person who has been drunk on power for so long. She lobbied the CDC, her union, AFT, lobbied the CDC to make it more difficult to reopen schools during the COVID era. That hurt kids in so many ways. They held children's education hostage. Why? For more money. They knew they could leverage that those closures in the negotiation process to say, hey, we're not going to open it until you give us more billions of more dollars. And that's exactly what happened. Many of her districts still didn't open after they got the ransom payments from the federal taxpayers. And so this is good news for parents, though. It's good news for families. It's good news for students. And it's even good news for teachers, because Randy Weingarten has a horrible track record of taking care of the teachers. Salaries are flat over time. All they do is fight to hire more people, which means you have less money to spend in the classroom. It's good for Randy Weingarten when they throw more money.
Yeah, because there's more people paying dues. Right, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And they have a larger voting block to push for all their political pet projects.
Yep.
They've turned the whole industry into being about politics as opposed to education. And when we see our nation's report card scores showing decades of learning loss, even though we spend $20,000 per kid per year nationwide, it's because the government school system has become more of a jobs program for administrators than an education initiative for kids. But the good news is you have some of the red states going all in on school choice. Trump is trying to push the way at the federal level as well. And hopefully at some point, the blue state politicians will start to listen to their real constituents, the kids' union, the parents, as opposed to the teachers' union. Everybody would be better off as a result. And if they don't, maybe those blue states will become red states, because they will learn at the ballot box.
Certainly, a lot of people are leaving those blue states, and that means they're going to lose some representation in the House, which means they're going to lose electoral votes, which is great for the map in 2032, no doubt about it. Corey DeAngelis, follow him on X at DeAngelis Corey, and check out his book, The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. Hey, thanks, my friend. This was great to catch up. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Rich. Good talking to you.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Big show for today. We're going to keep going here, and all full steam ahead till first pitch at 4:05. We're going to be on the air, but we're going to be watching the game, and we'll ding the bell every time that the Phils score. So we'll come back. We'll try out some bell sounds. But I want to tell you about Dr. Mike Veneria, a great guy and a great friend. You know, when it comes to your mouth health, your oral care, a lot of people think like, ah, it's no big deal, right? It's, you know, no, it matters. It really does. I was listening to this podcast the other day about your gut microbiome and how important it is, your oral mouth health, gum health, and it relates to that, which kind of relates to everything in your whole system. So, yeah, making sure you see the dentist twice a year, crucial for your health. There's a correlation actually between gum disease and heart attacks, which is crazy, but it's true. So you want to see a dentist twice a year. And when it comes to your smile, you want to have a great smile. So you go see Dr. Mike, because he's a terrific guy, two locations to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. And for over 10 consecutive years, he's been recognized as a master of implant dentistry among his peers. So other dentists send their patients to Dr. Mike Veneria for complicated dental procedures. They've been putting it off. You know you need dental work. You've been putting it off, or you've had an estimate. Get a second opinion. Get a free implant consultation by going to VeneriaDental.com. That's V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com, 856-786-2020. Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Rachel Zegler got slapped, proverbially slapped, you know, not really slapped by the producer and the producer's son of Disney for being such a self-absorbed, narcissistic, selfish little brat. And I thought what this guy said on Twitter yesterday or wherever he posted this was absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. Like, hey, you're not thinking about all the people that work on this movie. It's not just about you, you spoiled little brat. There are a lot of people here who are relying on the success of this movie, and you went out there and ruined it with all your little antics. And good for him for doing so. I'm really glad. This may be happy. Actually, this may be the happiest I've ever been. Not ever in my life, but it may be very happy all week to see this guy push back on her. I was like, you know, somebody has to say something to this little brat. But she is a spoiled, typical actress, you know, narcissist. Listen, I dated one once. many, many years ago, obviously, because I've been married for 17 years. But back in the day, I dated an actress. Oh, man. It was all about her. Everything. I mean, you think I'm bad. This was never going to work out. But, you know, it's always about the drama, too. Always with the drama. But the son of Snow White producer Mark Platt slammed Rachel Zegler as immature and narcissistic after it was revealed that his father flew to New York to speak to the film's lead actress. Jonah Platt, 38, brother of actor Ben Platt, issued a scathing response to one negative commentator on Instagram. So the comment read, "Your dad flew to New York City to reprimand a young actress? Any words on this? Because that's creepy and uncalled for. People have the right to free speech. No, shame on your father," the user added. So this is what Jonah Platt wrote back, and I love every word of this. And I reposted it on my X account. It's every word of this. This is what he said. "You really want to do this? Yeah? My dad, the producer of enormous piece of Disney IP, with hundreds of millions of dollars on the line, had to leave his family to fly across the country to reprimand his 20-year-old employee for dragging her personal politics into the middle of promoting the movie for which she signed a multi-million dollar contract to get paid and do publicity for. This is called adult responsibility and accountability. And her actions clearly hurt the film's box office. Free speech does not mean you're allowed to say whatever you want in your private employment without repercussions. Tens of thousands of people worked on that film, and she hijacked the conversation for her own immature desires at the risk of all the colleagues and crew and blue-collar workers who depend on that movie to be successful. Narcissism is not something to be coddled or encouraged." Bravo. Every word of that. Perfect. Perfect. It's not all about you, you spoiled little brat. This is what I always say, too, about movies. And this is what I ask people all the time, because I'm a movie buff. I love going to the movies. Not this piece of crap, but a lot of times people are like, "I won't go to the movies because they're all a bunch of commies and lefties." And I get all that. But his point about all the blue collar workers who work on these films, that build the sets and the lights and all the other things, the food service, everything that goes into it, right? It's not just about the Hollywood actors. These people make their living doing this. They're union guys, Steve Grillo, right? So Grillo was on the show yesterday, former Howard Stern intern. That tweet that I posted of the clip of the show yesterday, I think is at, DeSantis, check this, but it's at 1.5 million views by now.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, check the latest when you get a chance. I went viral, which is great. But, I mean, he's a guy. That's his job. Like, he works in the union. He's one of the guys that does the things with the things. I don't know, a gaffer. I don't know. I don't understand. You know, boom arms, whatever. Point is, there's a lot of other people involved, which is why I say I'm not going to be anti-movie. That's ridiculous. Because what? The lead star is a crazy lefty? I'm not seeing Snow White because the movie, from what I understand, and how you screw up Snow White is just ridiculous. You get handed Snow White and just say, make it into a live action movie. That's like a gimme. That's like print money. You should be able to print money in the basement with that. Instead, it's a box office flop because they went woke. And I'm not saying it's all her fault. I'm not saying it's all Rachel Zegler's fault. Disney bears a lot of blame to this too. Their little nonsense with taking out actors who are little people and then replacing them with CGI characters. Matt DeSantis, I still don't understand why you have not gotten me the woman who's the head of that group, the little people who are now suing Disney in a class action lawsuit.
I'm optimistic she will be on probably Monday or Tuesday.
Okay. Class action lawsuit against Disney for taking jobs away from little people and replacing them with CGI characters, CGI trolls, garden gnomes. They look like freaking garden gnomes. And this woman said, "Hey, look, I'm an actress. This is my job. I had a chance here to have a role, and you took that away from me in the name of political correctness. And now they're suing Disney. Good. I hope they win. Hope they bleed Disney dry. Good for them." So there's lots of reasons why I'm not seeing this steaming pile of crap. But at the end of the day, my choices are not political when I go see a movie, because I loved all the Captain America movies with Chris Evans. Chris Evans is a crazy lefty. I don't care. I'll go see the movies. Were great. But this is a piece of crap, so I'm not going to waste my money. It's too expensive. But you see, there's a difference, though. I'm not boycotting it because of politics. But a lot of people are. And that's also part of the problem, is because this spoiled little brat made it all about her. Disney bears a lot of responsibility in this, too. Absolutely, they do. Stupid decisions they made. And then, of course, trying to, you know, but she's the one that was out there as the face of this, speaking about how they had to change the whole storyline. And then all her antics, her pro-Palestinian antics, causing her co-star Gal Gadot to get death threats, to the point where Gal Gadot, Disney had to hire additional security for her so that she could show up to things. Yeah. So good for this producer for the proverbial slap on that little brat. All right, coming up 4 o'clock hour. What happened in Pennsylvania? That special election. Republicans nationally need to learn from this. Plus, more meltdowns over NPR possibly being shut down with no more government funding, which I say good. And that's the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaDental.com. We're coming right back.